He first came to local prominence as part of the protest group, the Hemming Park Five. Now, Connell Crooms is a candidate for Jacksonville mayor. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, a conversation with mayoral candidate Connell Crooms, the local activist who says there has been bullying and racism at Jacksonville City Hall. What are your thoughts about that? Get on the line right now at 549-2937. Then later, a new report looks at how plans to expand offshore drilling could be devastating to Florida's coast, along with our national parks and monuments here in our area. Plus, it's a new teething tool a local dad invented to help bond with his baby. We'll tell you about drools of the trade, all of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, he's a well-known activist in Jacksonville. Connell Crooms first became prominent around town when a protest in Hemming Park against the Trump administration's bombing of Syria turned violent. Police beat Crooms into unconsciousness. Crooms, who is deaf, had lost his hearing aid in the confrontation and couldn't hear police orders. He and the other activists involved in that incident became known as the Hemming Park Five. Now, charges against Connell Crooms were eventually dropped. But since that time, he stepped up his activism, and in April, he filed to run for Jacksonville mayor with no party affiliation. Connell Crooms is one of four candidates currently filed to challenge incumbent Lenny Curry. And recently, Crooms have stepped up his attacks on the city's establishment via social media, in particular by accusing the mayor, in his words, of being a racist bully. As the Jacksonville mayor's race starts to heat up, we're welcoming all of the candidates to the show. And this morning, candidate Connell Crooms steps into Studio 5 to talk about his campaign, his activism, and take your calls. Connell Crooms, thanks for being with us. Good morning.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts about the mayor's race? It won't be decided until May of next year, but candidates are already raising money and establishing their campaigns. We want your calls and comments at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. Tweets to at Melissa in Jax. And we welcome your feedback as well on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Speaking of Facebook, Connell Crooms, the other day, right before the Memorial Day weekend, you posted on your Facebook page, in your capacity as a candidate for mayor, that the incumbent, Lenny Curry, who of course is running for re-election, is a racist bully. That's very strong rhetoric. Can you explain what motivated you to post that and why you're accusing the mayor of being a racist?
Well, it's just a long record of saying nothing and doing everything wrong. A long record of treating people of color on city council with, you know, with strong arm tactics that really come from a place of racism, if more than anything. Because you don't see him treat, you know, white members on city council the same way he does Gary Dennis or Anna Broche. You know, I don't agree with the two council people very, very much. But there is a respect for the office that we have to have. And I think Lenny Curry has he's forgotten. He was elected to lead the people. He was elected to serve the people of Jacksonville. And bullying people of city council in a government that is based on compromise is your first mistake. And the fact that he constantly uplifts and upholds, you know, racist policies by Donald Trump and never called out Donald Trump for much of anything, you know, in a city that is 30% black, we see where this is going. We've seen this before. The racist bullies get away with everything and not get called out. And so it's just a matter of, you know, an obligation for not just me as an activist, as an organizer, but as the mayoral candidate to call it like it is, call it spade a spade. And he's a racist bully. That's what he is. So,
of course, the mayor would deny that. He'd say, in fact, his campaign slogan is one city, one Jacksonville. He would point to examples of reaching out to African-Americans and other people of color in this city. And let me also point out to our listeners, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, you, Connell, are deaf, and there is a sign language interpreter right here in the studio with us. who is helping you communicate with our audience, and we appreciate her being here. Okay, so so why run then? In a race where the incumbent is expected to raise millions of dollars, he has pretty good poll numbers, name recognition, a record to run on. Why jump into this race? Why go from being activist to political candidate?
Well, because it's a matter of, you know, I've been involved as an organizer and as an activist for about 7 years now. And it's a matter of we're going through in an era that we're in. We're in an era of America going towards fascism. You know, we have a responsibility as activists and as organizers that we continue to agitate the system. We push forward on our issues and we advocate for our issues. But now we're at a point now where we have the ability, mobilization to organize and put candidates to actually lead our issues on the agenda in a legislative way. So as opposed to, you know, demanding and begging legislators and mayors to listen to us, that we say, you know what, we're tired of begging now. We're about implementing our own agenda, implementing the things that we've long demanded as a community and as workers, implementing those things by force, by law, making it a matter of law and not a matter of a demand. So
what would be your agenda? What are you running on? What are your issues?
Well, you know, my main issue is being police accountability, because, you know, first and foremost, as much as we could talk about, you know, the pension crisis or, you know, the wage or workers' issues, the reality is just that Black people have demands that have never been met. And, you know, we were organizing throughout the whole Black Lives Matter movement, which was bigger than, you know, during the Civil Rights Movement and what the Black Panther Party did. Now, all these Civil Rights Movement did their part, and now it got to a point where the Black Lives Matter did their part, and now we're all inside organizing our agenda. What exactly are our demands? What exactly does police accountability look like? We know that the state of Florida has the Police Bill of Rights, but the cities still have the right to implement, you know, oversight over the police force that doesn't, you know, violate the law. But if it gets to a point that you say, you know what, we can't have police accountability because of the Police Bill of Rights, then the state has to look at the Police Bill of Rights law. So these are demands, and a lot of people, you know, especially the people, the candidates running for governor, have asked, how are they going to get the Black vote? You know, Black votes matter because Black lives matter. You know, you can't have one or the other. You can't say that Black lives matter and not do anything to actually get the Black vote. So my policies, you know, my agenda is, you know, police accountability. My agenda is minimum wage. My agenda is stronger unions. My agenda is all about, you know, uniting the people around the common issues as workers and also as marginalized groups. So there's a lot of issues that Jacksonville has gone through. You know, I have a team that's looking at, you know, the tax laws in Jacksonville, property taxes, for example. A lot of these big donors that donate to Lenny Curry and the Republican machine, you know, they dominate in that stuff. These are the billionaires and the property owners.
Well, and let me just jump in and ask you as a follow-up, to win a race like this, a citywide race, you need a lot of money. How are you going to run a competitive campaign? And I would ask this of any candidate challenging this sitting mayor. How are you going to run a competitive campaign and attract the attention and support of donors when you're speaking primarily, I would say, to groups that really have felt underrepresented in this city for a long time? Your issues are not those that would typically attract a lot of financial support, fair or not, from people that tend to fund political races in this city. So beyond doing interviews like what you're doing today with me and others, what's your strategy to run a competitive race against this well-funded and politically connected opponent, this incumbent mayor?
Absolutely. It's actually a great question. This is my first radio interview, and you know, this campaign is still early. I'm not trying to play all my cards out on the table, but because it's chess, not checkers. That's the way I look at it. But I will say, you know, don't forget that I am an organizer. I've been organizing in Jacksonville for years, and I don't think we've ever lost a campaign. And, you know, I will be taking in a lot of the tactics, a lot of the strategies, and, you know, working with the union. And a lot of what we did in our Teamsters United campaign, a lot of those strategies and how we were able to unite working class voters who some this was actually happening during the same time that the Trump and Hillary Clinton presidency was going on, that the Teamsters were having their own election. So we were able to do that because we were able to look past, beyond, you know, Trump and Hillary rhetoric and stick to the working issues, the working class issues, and people voted for that. And so when you talk about, you know, what is my strategy is, you know, is organizing. Yes, we're going to need money. Yes, we're going to need a lot of donations. I plan on tapping into the 400,000 that people that live in Florida, tapping into that base and actually, you know, in order to really support this campaign. This campaign started off on a hot streak, and it's still going on a hot streak. I've yet to have a week break from not campaigning and talking about it. So the strategy moving forward is, again, to talk to the people, knock on doors, to get out there in the street, to be visible, because we are probably the most visible candidate in this race. And I think that it would be a mistake for any other candidate to underestimate what we can do in this race.
There are a couple of other filed candidates. You're running as a no party affiliated candidate. There's one Democratic candidate, Dorsal Cohen, and former Atlantic Beach Commissioner Jimmy Hill is in the race as a Republican. Former city, or outgoing, I should say, City Council President Anna Brochet may run. She's flirted with that. Now, there will be a unitary election for this race in March of 2019. And unless a candidate clears 50% plus one, the two top finishers will move on to the May 2019 election. Is it your goal to keep Lenny Curry below 50% plus one? Is that your goal? On your Facebook post the other day, you said, in a city that's over 30% black, we are voting Curry out next year. Is your goal to keep him below that threshold in the March election and force him into a runoff?
Well, I want to tell you that we started organizing this campaign. We looked at the historical records of city council races, and you know, the last election between Alvin Brown and Lenny Curry came down to the wire. And so we plan on actually not just holding Lenny Curry to 51%, under 50%, but actually winning. We don't plan on for a runoff. So again, that's kind of where, you know, that's where the chestnut checkers line comes back into play, because, you know, we're not politically illiterate. We are very politically organized. We're very organized. And we know what the statistics are. We know where, you know, the voter interest is. And so, again, we actually plan on getting above 51%, because I would hate to have to run this race and a runoff again. So we actually want to win, and we're going to win outright and get straight to work. That's what we want to do.
Let's go to some calls now for mayoral candidate Connell Crooms. He's running as a no party affiliated candidate for mayor. In recent days on social media, he's called incumbent mayor Lenny Curry a racist bully. What are your thoughts about the mayor's race? 549-2937. Sam is out in Jacksonville Beach. Hi, Sam. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. And thank you for taking my call. This is Sam Hall. Live out in the Jacksonville Beach area. I'm on the ballot for the school board for this fall, so I have an interest in education. I'm wondering, what will you do if you were to become mayor to increase the collaboration between the city and the school board to ensure that we have a first-class education here in the city? Thank you.
Thanks, Sam.
Well, to answer your question, I'll say first and foremost, take guns out of school. Teachers don't need guns. They need school books. They need funds. So, you know, as mayor, one of the things that I want to do is put more funding back in City Hall. I do truly agree with the caller that there needs to be more collaboration with City Hall and the school board. I truly believe in that. But at the end of the day, the school board only works with what they have. That's just the truth.
And also, the mayor's office doesn't control the funding that the school board administers.
Right. But, you know, there's no reason why that, you know, the city doesn't, I mean, the city benefits from these students most of all. There's no reason why that the city can't earmark funding, more funding for the school board, put more funding into the school budget. Yes, they get their budget from the state, but what is the city's role in education? What is the city's role in education? So, I mean, most people can't really answer that because, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's politics. And you have, as long as we're taking funding, cutting funding for the schools and putting guns in the schools, we're going to keep circling around these same questions about what's the collaboration. What can City Hall do to support our students in schools? And then we should take an active role in that. And I would like to see City Hall take a more active role in education.
How would you go about doing that?
Well, again, this goes back down to, like I said, it goes back down to taxes. I truly believe that, you know, the large employers in Jacksonville, the corporations in Jacksonville, should have to pay more in property taxes because, you know, there was a report that came out that 35,000 people owe a total of $58 million into the city coffers. So we're $58 million short. But I don't believe that 35,000 people.
Where was that report?
That was reported on the news. First Coast News had put out that report not too long ago. Around the same time, they also put out the report on housing and rent control and things like that. So there are a lot of financial issues that are financial shortfalls that are facing the city budget, but there's no creativity in about how to make up those shortfalls. Even though the answer's staring and right at the face, we have Walmarts? We have how many large employers that aren't paying anything?
Do you think the city should raise the millage rate? There, for years, people that study that issue think it's artificially low compared to other Florida cities, which has led to a host of fiscal issues over a period of years. What about that?
I don't believe that the city should raise millage rate because, again, I truly think that the answer isn't, and you know, the people who live here that haven't, you know, paid much payback in their property taxes because again, 35,000 people owe $58 million. But the city has more to gain if they started taxing these the large employers that are already here. There's currently a pending strike at UPS right now. So that's over 3,000 employees with UPS just opening up another hub. Amazon just opened up another hub. Amazon, who also doesn't treat their workers with the decent respect that working class people deserve. So a lot of these large and major employers, major corporations are literally taking everything and giving back nothing. I think the people have given enough to the city of Jacksonville.
Let's go to some more calls for mayoral candidate Connell Crooms, 549-2937. Joe is in Arlington. Hey, Joe. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Melissa Ross. How are you this morning?
Okay,
good morning.
Thanks.
Good morning, candidate Crooms. I have a question for you. I'm an educator, a former educator, and I'm also a former Republican, and I'm not a big Trump fan, but I'm also not a big fan of name-calling either. I'm also not a fan of the current mayor, so I have a quiz question for you. I know you're advocating the African-American, okay. 30% of Jacksonville is African-American, and I get that. I'm wondering if you know the name Phyllis Wheatley. I'm wondering if you're familiar with that name.
Well, what's your question, Joe, I don't think he knows who that is, so what's your question?
I'm not sure. Well, I'm really kind of curious. If you're not sure of who these historic people are, I'm not sure if you can represent the African-American culture. And so that is my question. If you're not sure who it is, I have to say shame on you. And I think you need to look that up and see, you know, who she was and where she fits into your cause.
Well, thanks for that call. Go ahead, Connell Crooms. And
well,
Phyllis Wheatley, she was an African-American female poet. I just Googled her, so.
Okay, well, I would say Jacksonville
first
has
the first published African-American female poet, by the way. Okay, but go ahead.
Okay, I would say Jacksonville has a deep history on black struggle. To say that, if I don't know who someone is, it means that I'm not black enough to represent black people is pretty inaccurate. Because, you know, I do get my belief from A. Philip Randolph, who was a black labor leader in Jackson, from Jacksonville, and led the, you know, the civil rights movement, did a lot of collaboration with MLK and his Million Man March, where he gave his famous I Have a Dream speech. Now, MLK had a large role in not just in labor, but in black civil rights movement. So that's kind of where I take my model from. You know, I honor the people of Jacksonville, especially the black people like Rodney Hurst, who have led black struggle during Axe Handle Saturdays and all of during the labor movement. You know, A. Philip Randolph also organized the first African-American union, the sleeper car workers, you know. So there's a lot of history. And I've studied a lot of history. I may not know who one individual is, but I can tell you who Fred Hampton is. I can tell you who Malcolm X is. I can tell you who MLK is, A. Philip Randolph, and Assata Shakur. So these are a lot of people that I respect. And I do model my politics after them. But we have a modern touch. We have a modern touch. And, you know, we're going to appeal to not just Republicans, but Democrats are going to appeal to all people, because this is what this government is about. Jacksonville is a working class city, and that's why, you know, companies came here. That's why the Jaguars came here. It's because of the working class support for our team and our workers. So,
and if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Connell Crooms. He's running as a no party affiliated candidate for Jacksonville mayor. Crooms is an activist. He was part of the group arrested in Hemming Park during a protest that turned violent with police. They became known as the Hemming Park Five. Connell Crooms is legally deaf. You might be able to pick that up a little bit as we talk to him here on the radio. His sign language interpreter is speaking with us right now, or interpreting my words and your caller's words to Connell right now here in studio. And you've probably seen an image of Connell Crooms if you've driven over the Hart Bridge. There's a mural of Crooms and another activist on a silo in the Talleyrand neighborhood on the riverside, right there near Everbank Field. Let's go to Ron on the west side. Hi, Ron. Good morning.
Hey.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
My question is regarding the statement he made earlier about large corporations. I assume he means them picking up the shortfall. The $58 million he mentioned. I don't understand why he thinks they should be responsible when actually they're bringing thousands of jobs to Jacksonville. Amazon's brought thousands of jobs recently, which is increasing our economy. I think it should be put on the taxpayers who have gotten the free ride for a very long time. The reason that we are short is because we're not managing the millage rate correctly. It should be more.
Okay. So thanks, Ron. So Ron's saying we don't need to tax corporations more. We need to raise property taxes. Your thoughts?
My thinking is this, you know, it's a fear tatting that we've heard during the Obama administration, and we're still hearing. We heard it during Bush, Obama, and now Trump, that a lot of these companies, if we don't abide to the will of these corporations, that they're going to take jobs away. Understand this. Jacksonville is 800 plus square miles. Jacksonville is the largest city in the nation land-wise. These companies have more to benefit from the working people of Jacksonville than we benefit from them. If they can't provide good, healthy jobs, we'll find employers that can. And there are plenty of people who do it just out there on the West Coast. Chick-fil-A raised their minimum wage to $17 in California. For somebody to tell me that it's too much or it's unrealistic, it's already here. It's already happening. It's already here. You know, we live in a real world.
It's happening in blue states. How do you get those issues to the forefront in a purple state, and particularly in Jacksonville, which is a little more red than purple?
Well, that's actually a great point, because a lot of people forget that there are a lot of independents in Florida, and which is where you've seen that if you pay attention to the Democratic primary, there's a lot of criticism to Bill Nelson for not being, you know, far left enough, for not being enough of a Democrat. He's being very centrist, and people are saying that it doesn't work for Florida anymore. Both parties no longer work for Florida anymore. George Bush only won Florida by 500 votes, so.
And let me ask you as a follow-up, here's a tweet from a listener. Why aren't you running as a Democrat? It's hard for a no-party affiliated candidate to break through. You're running as a no-party affiliated mayoral candidate, but your rhetoric and your issues certainly fall more to the left So why aren't you running as a Democrat?
Well, the reason being is because when I started getting involved in activism, I was a Democrat, and ultimately I abandoned the party because, as you see, the party is very corporate. They ain't here to the will of the corporation. So running as a Democrat will be a slap in the face, will be betray the brand that I've long built doing. I'm running on the brand now. I'm running on the issue that I've always advocated for. You know, we've mobilized thousands of people in Jacksonville. We've shut down downtown. We've been able to do amazing things, and we didn't do it as Democrats. And when I was beaten in Heming Park, the Democrats never came out for free speech, and this is supposed to be the party of free speech. So I have a lot of criticism for the Democrats. But just, you know, the Republicans are just—it's just too easy of a target. It's easy to criticize the Republicans, but I criticize the Democrats because I expect better from them. So it would be wrong for me to run as a Democrat right now, especially in a city like Jacksonville, where you have a very divided government and people are looking for a unifier. They want people to unify around working class issues, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. What is your agenda? What is your policies that are going to benefit the people? And I can't benefit the people if I'm kowtowing to one party over another.
Let's take one more call for mayoral candidate Connell Crooms. Cortez is on the north side. Cortez, good morning.
Yes. One of the reasons why I became a conservative Republican is because of the way he's calling everybody racist. That's not a platform. So can you tell us what else you had in mind besides calling other people racist? But that's not going to take you anywhere. That's my comment as a minority. I'm sick and tired of hearing that term. Thank you.
Thank you. So is calling the incumbent mayor a racist, is that a unifying strategy as a candidate for this office?
Well, here's the thing. You know, I live in a real world, and we're supposed to live in a post-racial society. As we all know, a post-racial society is not here. I don't like calling people a racist, but if you're racist, then you're racist. You know, that's just a fact. You know, I say that from a lived experience.
And to reiterate, you're calling the mayor a racist because of the way you say he's treated minorities on the city council and also his support of President Trump. So, by extension, are people who voted for President Trump in this city, are they racists? And how are you going to win their support?
Absolutely not. You know, not all Trump voters are racist. And we've seen that again. Like I say that as a union member, where I literally agreed with so many points with union workers who were Trump supporters, and they hated Hillary Clinton. I didn't like Hillary Clinton either, but a lot of these voters who voted for Trump were saying, "Well, look at the options we had." Look at the options we had. We still got Trump, but you know, I got to understand that your anxiety, your insecurity, your financial insecurity as a working class person is what drove you to vote for Trump. Trump didn't talk to the unions. He did that. He co-opted, you know, working class language for a right-wing agenda. He did that. And so it's a matter of just like calling it what it is. You know, as an elected official, you have responsibility to uphold moral and responsible government from top down. So, you know, Lenny Curry is an elected mayor, and he is not calling out Donald Trump. And he keeps bringing Donald Trump into a city that is over 30% black and is very working class. And he's not doing anything. He's not unifying the people. He's dividing the people. So, yes, some people may not like being called racist, but if somebody's calling you racist, you might want to check yourself. What are you doing that is making people call you a racist? What is it that you're doing?
Okay. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show today, and we'll continue to follow this campaign. It's a long way to go until the election. Candidates are just getting started, but Connell Crooms is a filed candidate for mayor. And we thank you for being on the show today. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And of course, we've invited Mayor Curry to appear on our program, and we hope to eventually have all the mayoral candidates as well. Much more still ahead later, how some local dads created new teething tools for their babies that encourage bonding with dad as well as mom. But up next, why plans to expand offshore drilling are threatening Florida's coasts, national parks, and monuments. That's after this.
Comcast is building a gig speed network providing small businesses across the country with the opportunity to dream gig. Learn more at dreamgig.com. Comcast Business, built for business.
ViStar Credit Union, focused on delivering quality service to its members while remaining financially strong. ViStar, we never forget that it's your money. Information available at 777-6000 or vistarcu.org.
WJCT and Baptist Health are pleased to announce that Bobby Thomas, beauty and fashion expert and author of The Power of Style, Everything You Need to Know Before You Get Dressed, will be this year's keynote speaker at A Day for Her, Saturday, August 18th at the Hyatt Hotel. Bobby, the style editor for The Today Show, will share Bobby's buzz tips on everything from favorite beauty tricks to her favorite lifestyle finds. For more information or to purchase tickets, log on to wjct.org/events.
Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup, a live call-in program where you talk about the biggest stories in the state.
This Friday, the politics of hurricane season, as Governor Scott declares a state of emergency, even though many Florida counties saw little recent rain. Also, medical marijuana in Florida, how doctors are prescribing it.
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Fridays at 1 on WJCT.
I'm Christopher Kimball from Milk Street Radio. This week, I chat with reporter Andres O'Hara on the new wave of wine label designs and how they're changing what we drink. Also on this week's show, restaurateur and opera singer Alexander Smalls discusses his new book, Between Harlem and Heaven. Plus, we head to Rome to get an authentic recipe for rigatoni with broccoli sauce. Coming up this week on Milk Street Radio from PRX.
Sunday morning at 7 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
If a hurricane threatens our state, Florida's public radio stations have joined forces to ensure you receive important storm information. No matter where you are, you can stay informed on the radio, online, on social media, and on the mobile app Florida Storms. Timely weather information is always available from WJCT. The Florida Public Radio Emergency Network is supported by Citizens Property Insurance. Online at citizensfla.com.
Welcome back. Well, the Trump administration's controversial plan to expand offshore drilling in the United States imperils dozens of national parks, national seashore areas, and national monuments in 18 states. That includes several sites right here in Northeast Florida. All this, according to a new report by the National Parks Conservation Association and the Natural Resources Defense Council. It's called Spoiled Parks. Nicholas Lund is the co-author of the report and senior manager of the Landscape Conservation Program for the National Parks Conservation Association, and he's on the line. Nicholas, thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And the Trump administration wants to expand offshore drilling in 18 coastal states, from Alaska to New York, Florida to California. Here in Florida, of course, this is controversial with all of our coastline. In addition to the threat that would be posed to our beaches, your report looks at how this could affect our national parks and historic sites. Tell us a little bit about what you found.
Sure, of course. You know, as you mentioned, the proposal to expand offshore drilling to 90% of all federal waters puts a lot of coastline at risk. Beaches that we all love, coastal areas that we visit with our families, and also national parks. And so what my organization partnered with NRDC wants to do is just remind folks, especially as we're getting this summer travel season underway, about all the beautiful national parks. These are places that they visit with their kids, maybe, or places that they've gone to see wildlife, places that are at risk. And so we took a look at the proposal that the administration put out in January, and we found that 68 coastal parks around the country are at risk from newly expanded drilling. And as you said, this is areas that have never seen drilling before, including the entire Atlantic Ocean, the entire Pacific Ocean, places up through Alaska. So a lot of new areas are under threat of a spill or other impacts from oil and gas development.
And in addition to famous places like Cape Cod, Fort Sumter, even the Statue of Liberty, you look at sites in 18 different states, including several historic sites and national parks right here in Florida. Particularly our corner of Florida has a number of sites that figure into your report. Where are the sites here in Northeast Florida that you've identified as being threatened by expanded offshore drilling?
Sure. There are four National Park Service managed sites, four national parks in Northeast Florida that we've seen. Timaquan Ecological and Historical Preserve there, which is a beautiful site that I've been to before and really will never forget. It's sort of a very powerful area. Fort Caroline National Memorial, Castillo de San Marcos National Monument, and Fort Matanzas National Monument. A little further down the coast, of course, is Canaveral National Seashore. And then going down around Florida, of course, you know, Biscayne, Everglades, Big Cypress, and then all the way over to Gulf Islands National Seashore by Pensacola.
Now, there's rare bipartisan support in Florida, or rather, I should say rare bipartisan agreement in Florida that offshore drilling would be a bad idea for this state with our tourism-based economy. And so you don't often see the two parties agreeing on much, but this is something that definitely most public officials in this state are on the same page about. Bring us up to date on where this stands. States around the country are resisting President Trump's desire to expand offshore drilling, not just Florida. What are the politics of this, and where do you see this issue going from here as we look for the next moves from the White House?
Well, so you're absolutely right that, you know, going to the beach in Florida, visiting national parks, that's not a partisan issue. Everyone loves to go to these areas, Republican or Democrat or other. And so there has been strong bipartisan opposition to this plan in Florida and really in all of the areas, the coastal areas that are under new threat. So we've seen strong bipartisan support all the way up the coast from Florida to Maine and then from Washington to California. And so the question, as you say, becomes what's the administration going to do with that information? Because, of course, it's not just congressional opposition, but it's all the groups on the ground, these towns and municipalities and counties, fishermen's groups, groups that rely on tourism economies, all these folks who actually live in these areas don't want to see this new drilling. So the question becomes, will the administration listen? And when a new draft of this plan, a proposed final draft, comes out sometime in the fall, which areas are still going to be in, which areas are going to be out? We really don't know. But there is massive opposition on both coasts to this, and so we really hope that the new areas that are proposed for drilling are not included in the next iteration of this plan.
And give us a call with your thoughts on the Trump administration's plan to expand offshore drilling, 549-2937. Now, in January, Ryan Zinke, the Secretary of the Interior, apparently said Florida would be exempt from this plan to expand offshore drilling. More recently, he said that no one is exempted, that this would be a sweeping plan to boost fossil fuel production. It would open nearly all U.S. waters to oil exploration. And so what about Florida's hopes that perhaps they might be spared from this? We really don't know.
We really don't know. You know, the administration is, sort of shooting from the hip on some of their statements. You're correct that Secretary Zinke tweeted just a couple of days after releasing the draft report that he had spoken with Governor Scott, and as a result of that had, you know, taken Florida out of the plan. That was later in, you know, congressional testimony, the head of the agency that oversees this said that, you know, that tweet was just a tweet. It's not formal policy, and we're not you know, pulling any state out before we're actually ready to. So we just don't know. You know, the thing that I think is important to remember about, you know, pulling one state off is that this is the water. And so if there's a spill offshore, like we saw at Deepwater Horizon or some other states, or some other spills, it could drift into Floridian waters, whether or not there's drilling going on right off the coast. so just because Florida might be out, you know, if there's drilling right off the coast of southern Georgia, for example, or, you know, continued areas in the Gulf, that could still impact Florida beaches and national parks, even if the state itself is off.
Let's go to a call from Mike on the north side. Hi, Mike. Good morning. Go ahead.
Yes. Hello. How are you?
Okay.
Yes, I'm opposed to this offshore drilling because, you know, it's bad for the environment. And, you know, we get a lot of money, like, for tourism down here, but what's it going to do to us after they have this offshore drilling going on? I mean, it's going to hurt the water. And if we need the water to drink, I mean, what's going to happen if the oil leaks, you know, into the drinking water? And people say, oh, well, that won't happen. Well, you know, it's going to happen. I mean, and people are, the only thing they're thinking about is the almighty dollar, okay? I mean, come on, people. Quit thinking about this offshore drilling. And you're going to hurt the fish population. And people who like to fish these waters are not going to be able to do it anymore because all this oil, you know, the only thing they're thinking about is making more millions. Well, what you're doing is killing us all. I mean, you're just killing us all with this.
Mike, I'm actually really glad you brought up that economic argument. So the focus of our report is of the economic importance of these national parks that are affected. You know, a lot of pro-drilling folks will like to make this argument into a, you know, drilling dollars versus, you know, environmental hippiness or something. It's really not that. National parks are bring $5.7 billion to our economy. That's just the coastal parks around the country. You know, in Florida, the 11 coastal parks that are at risk of this new plan in 2017 brought $876 million in economic output and supported 9,200 jobs. So these are big economic generators for the area. That's not even to mention all the other beaches and other coastal tourism and other things going on the coast of Florida that are strong, stable economies that don't want to be impacted by oil spills.
And just last week, Florida's congressional delegation weighed in on this. They cited a Defense Department report that expressed worries about expanded offshore drilling. So defining it almost as a national security risk, it seems.
Sure. There are lots of areas off the coast, especially in the eastern Gulf off of Florida's west coast and also various parts of the Atlantic and Pacific that are very important to the Department of Defense. They do big training exercises. They have submarines that they don't want impacted by the seismic testing that needs to occur for oil and gas development. And so there is a lot of potential sort of damaging overlap between areas proposed for drilling and areas that are important for the training of our military and our national security.
And there's a bipartisan accord among our congressional delegation in Florida, both Republicans and Democrats representing the state in Washington, to push for an extension of the current moratorium on offshore drilling off Florida's waters. That runs through, I believe, the year 2022. Our representatives in Congress want to push that another 5 years out and have an eye toward a permanent moratorium if they can get it. Let's go to Andy in St. Augustine. Andy, go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I just have a quick comment, and it's sort of been a bone of contention with me. If I have a bucket of water and I go running around and I bump something, I spill some water. Or if an oil tanker has a leak, that's a spill. But if there's an unmanaged gusher, like we had here off our coast, that's a gusher. And I just sort of feel like I get upset when I hear them call it an oil spill.
Right. And you're referring, I think, to the Deepwater Horizon spill, which did it gushed for years and years. Or not years and years, but many, many months. Thanks, Andy.
Yeah.
Okay. Nicholas Lynn, your final thoughts about this and where the issue goes from here on Capitol Hill.
Well, I just want to encourage folks in Florida to continue to push the administration to not include these areas in the plan. Whether it's a gusher or a spill, all kinds of damaging things can happen to Florida's beaches from expanded drilling, and you just don't need it. You guys have beautiful coastlines. You guys are doing great. We don't want oil on those beaches, and we want to make sure the administration knows that.
Nicholas Lund is the co-author of the new report, Spoiled Parks. He's with the National Parks Conservation Association. Nicholas, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
And in a moment, it's a new toy built for those teething babies, but designed by dads. We'll tell you about Drools of the Trade and the Jacksonville dad that created it right after this.
Comcast is building a gig speed network providing small businesses across the country with the opportunity to dream gig. Learn more at dreamgig.com. Comcast Business, built for business.
Vistar Credit Union, focused on delivering various loan options to its members while remaining financially strong since 1952. Vistar, we never forget that it's your money. Information available at 777-6000 or vistarcu.org.
It's a cause that conservative critics and Kim Kardashian can agree on: sentencing reform. Right now, they're focused on helping Matthew Charles, a grandfather from Tennessee. Charles got released early after the rules for drug offenders changed, but now he's back in prison after a court determined he did not qualify for clemency. Can his supporters help win his freedom back? Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
On the next Fresh Air, former Vogue creative director and America's Next Top Model judge Andre Leon Talley describes how he went from a simple four-room house with no central heating in the Jim Crow South to the world of international fashion. Talley is the subject of the new documentary, The Gospel According to Andre. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
When other manufacturers in this economy packed it up and went overseas, one guy in Columbus, Georgia, doubled down.
They were closing this whole factory down and moving to Mexico. 2 weeks later, they called me, said, you know what? We've been thinking about it. We might give you an opportunity to quote on some of this stuff.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. What it takes to make it in American manufacturing. That is next time on Marketplace. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it's a new toy built for babies and designed by dads. These are teething tools made in dad-friendly shapes, and they encourage bonding between father and child. Now, the idea began when one of the co-founders of Forge, a 3D printing company here in Jacksonville, had his first child. And he was freaking out. His house was quickly overrun with mommy and baby stuff. And this dad felt excluded because he didn't see any daddy and baby stuff. He certainly didn't get any presents from the baby shower, and he didn't see much at local stores. This new dad wanted to play with his firstborn son, but didn't have the tools. Enter Drools of the Trade, a teething tool for babies by dads. Bryce Fannensteel of Forge Manufacturing is the creator of Drools of the Trade, and he joins us now. Good morning, Bryce.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to see you. And so you came up with something that you thought would work for you and your son. How did you come up with this idea? Tell us about Drools of the Trade.
Well, the idea started when I was playing with my son, and we had a giraffe. I don't know if you've seen the whole teething giraffe, and I was kind of like, I don't even know what sound a giraffe makes, you know? So it was how do I play with this thing? And so, you know, we have a 3D printing company, and we started making molds, you know, about 2.5 years ago. And
kind of more manly molds, I guess, like saws and paintbrushes and things like that.
Well, the whole idea was more something that was functional, you know, that I could play with my son. And it turns out we made them out of FDA silicone. They worked. His first words, you know, for Dada, he was holding the tool, and I could say, "Where's Daddy's tools?" And he'd go find them. And
so you created something that not only would help your son teeth, but would help you bond with him.
Exactly, that's the idea, you know, create an inclusive environment, not so much giraffes and alien shapes.
But. And what you do at Forge 3D Printing is such cool technology, anyway, and that you use that technology to create this is really neat. In fact, you did research on this and realized you weren't alone as a new father. A new dad's hormone levels, even his brain mapping changes because so much attention is focused on mom and baby, which is normal and expected, but often the fathers can kind of feel left out and kind of struggle. So this was sort of your way of responding to that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we're on Kickstarter now trying to get some money going for getting actual production run from factories. We've got some hands-on events coming up. We're at the Man Market this weekend at Intuition Ale with the Makery. We're at Bay and B Every time we get, if you have a teething baby around and they get their hands on it, you know, the shapes
love it.
And everything.
Yeah, yeah. I gave one of your teething toys to our news director. She has a little boy at home, and she said he really is teething well with it. Not only that, retailers have pulled Orajel from the shelves. There have been some deadly side effects. That's what we used on our kids, Orajel. So are you seeing this hopefully as maybe an alternative to that product?
Yeah, I mean, you know, babies are going to chew on about anything, you know. So, for me, it's more about just quality time and getting the dad involved and, you know, the mom involved too. I'm not just saying moms don't use tools. But
sure. Now, what does your wife think of these?
Well, she likes them. I mean,
she likes them too.
There's a lot of them running around the house.
How many kids do you guys have?
We've got two kids right now.
Okay, and you brought two tools. Let me see these tools you brought with you. These are really neat, and they're made out of silicone. So one, and they say drools on them, but they're tools. Like they look like construction tools. You've got a paintbrush that's blue. You've got a pink. What is this?
That's a pipe wrench.
A pink pipe wrench. That shows you what I know about construction. And in a blue, it looks like a saw. It's and these are hard enough that they'll work as a teething tool, but they're soft enough that they're safe.
Yeah, we went by the children's safety, you know, checklist, and it's FDA certified silicone. And I would just say check out the Kickstarter. Help us out. We designed them. We want to make them downtown.
And do you hope to expand them all over the country? Is that your goal?
Yeah. Well, they'll be online, you know.
Yeah, but really get the word out nationally about this.
Yeah, it's not going to hurt anybody.
Yeah, sure. And the website is droolsofthetrade.com. Now, you mentioned you're going to be doing some appearances. Let's tell everybody where you're going to be over the next month or so.
Well, we're at Intuition Ale this Saturday for the man market that the makery is putting on. We are at Bay
What's the man market?
Well, so have you had the makery people?
I know about the makery, but I didn't know there was a man market.
Well, I talked to Sarah there, and she said she was upset that it's all, you know, they're getting a lot of kind of crafts, and they wanted to get more leather and steel and woodwork.
Some manly products.
Yeah.
So you're going to be at that.
With
Saturday,
baby teethers, yeah.
With the baby teethers, Saturday at Intuition Ale Works. What time can people come see you?
I think it's like noon to 6.
But, okay. Anything else?
Yeah, and we're at Bay and B, but they don't. Yeah, I think we've already got RSVPs to capacity, so it's kind of top secret. But.
Well, I wish you the best with this. And if you search Drools of the Trade on Kickstarter, you can contribute to this locally made product or go to their website. It's droolsofthetrade.com. Bryce Fannin-Steel of Forge Manufacturing, he's the creator of Drools of the Trade and a local dad. So kudos, and keep us posted on your success.
Yeah, will do, Melissa. Thanks.
And if there are any babies that are parents of babies here in our building, I've got some teething tools right here for you guys. So come on downstairs and get them. Well, that's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merschart. Michelle Corum runs the board. Our theme is composed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chepchik. 1A's up next as a Nashville man's return to prison prompts calls for sentencing reform. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight at 8, just keep listening for music on the Electro Lounge. Have a great day, everybody.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.